Hello, welcome to another episode of the B-Ball Index podcast. My name is Jacob Goldstein, and I am your host this week, along with my esteemed co-host, who has never missed an episode, Tim. How you doing, Tim?
Never missed an episode. We've made it. We're almost there. This is the last one before the season starts.
It's very exciting. Finally. When we're recording next week, we'll actually have basketball games that matter to talk about. Just two, but you know, I'll take it. It's a start.
Yeah, I'm sick of breaking down preseason film.
I'm sick of repeatedly saying that preseason plus minus is irrelevant and should be entirely ignored. I've said it a few times.
We'll finally move past it. We're almost there.
Yeah, I can start saying that early season plus minus is irrelevant and should be ignored. It's a very exciting time.
That's a great step up.
But today, we're going to be talking about someone who literally cannot be ignored, Zion Williamson. And we're going to be talking about specifically what role, offensive role, we talk about offensive roles all the time, is going to be best suited for Zion's skill set. So, Tim, why don't you explain to our lovely listeners how we're going about this?
So what we first started off by doing was we need to come up with the grades. We don't currently have the college grading system all set up. So in lieu of that, we solicited help from the internet. And we had, I think, about 40 responses, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
40 or so responses. And each of those individuals filled out what they thought the percentile for Zion would be in each of our atomic grades. So perimeter shooting, roll gravity, rebounding, things like that, playmaking. And we took the median response from each of those areas. So for perimeter shooting, the median response was that Zion would be in the 30th percentile, which is a D grade. And we did that for all of the different areas. And I will note, it was interesting seeing how for certain ones, like his finishing, maybe his interior defense, the consensus was, the range of outcomes that we saw, the range of answers was more concise. It seems like the general perception of what Zion brings to the table in those areas is more clear and there was less variation. Whereas with his shooting, with his playmaking, with his perimeter defense, with his one-on-one play, those were all areas where there were wide-ranging answers. But so what we did was we took all of those median grades and we filled out that profile in the calculations that we have. We've spoken before about how we ran some machine learning to figure out for each of the offensive roles, each of the advanced positions, which skill sets matter the most. And from that, we're able to calculate overall grades and figure out which offensive roles players are best fit for. So we plugged all of that in. Maybe we can touch on in a second what those assumed grades are to be. And I think they look pretty good.
Absolutely.
They look accurate to me, and that Zion's going to be a pretty good basketball player. He has a couple weak areas, but I think this makes it clear that at least the expectation of what he'll bring to the table is elite play in a couple areas, pretty solid play in a lot of other areas, and only a few weak areas. So why don't we touch on that, Jacob? Do you want to walk us through what the consensus was in the different categories? We can maybe comment on those and then get to what the role fits were.
For sure. Yeah. So the way we're judging this is, as Tim said, we got about 40 responses to our request for just having people rate what they think Zion will end up as. And we're just looking at the median grade in response. And we're using median just because that helps us eliminate any of the larger outliers and stick closer to kind of the general consensus of the sampled group, I suppose. So his top grade, according to everyone we polled, is likely to be finishing, followed by roll gravity, both of those above the 90th percentile, which, I mean, makes a ton of sense. He's a ludicrous athlete and is just going to be able to dunk on everyone. And he also, I mean, he's not just a great athlete. He also is like really good touch around the rim and incredible body control. And so, I fully expect him to be one of the top guys in rim field goal percent. So makes a lot of sense to me. After that, his top few categories are on off-ball movement, where he was rated an 83 by our group. Offensive rebounding was also an 80. One-on-one play, defensive rebounding, both came in at 75. Interior defense came in at 70. Post play came in at a nice 69. Perimeter defense and playmaking both around a 60. And then his lowest category, which makes sense, perimeter shooting in the 30th percentile among all players. So overall, two grades in the 90s, another two in the 80s, a handful more above the 70th percentile, and only one likely to end up in below an average player, which for a rookie would be a really impressive set of grades and a great season.
Absolutely. And actually, as we're talking, somebody else just filled out the form. I think they may be like 1% different after that response. Well, but as you were saying, it looks like Zion's going to be a good basketball player. The areas that he's strongest are the ones that we seem to find. It's a lot of the ones related directly to his athleticism with the cutting, finishing at the rim, his roll gravity. I don't think he'll be a big pick and pop threat, but the vertical gravity, the vertical lob threat that he is, will be able to make up for being deficient in the one small area with being a large asset for the Pelicans team. And absolutely, I think that from watching the first couple of preseason games, the Pelicans have recognized this and they've set Zion up well to succeed with the way they're using him. And they're not just letting him, you know, get his putbacks and get his dump offs and beat the bigger guys off the dribble or bully the little guys. They're also manufacturing opportunities for him to score by generating designed cuts for him where he's kind of getting a little bit of a brush screen. So his guy is just kind of held back, you know, half a step or one step. And then Zion's able to, as he's running towards the rim, catch the ball. Maybe he has to take a step or two, get through some contact, like a running back, and then he's just finishing at the rim. So it's very smart. It's the type of thing I would have expected Alvin Gentry to put together, and I'm glad that they have. And I think that piece, along with his natural gifts, will enable him to be he'll be very efficient, but he'll be higher volume because he's not just going to be relying on those secondary actions like getting a put back or getting a dump off. Those aren't things he creates. So they found ways to create for him in the absence of being an incredibly strong playmaker, shooter, or he'll be a decent one-on-one player, especially depending on the matchup. But I like what they've done to help raise the impact and raise his volume with his skill set.
Yeah, they've deployed him really smartly. And, you know, the one-on-one situations they've had him going at is when he's been matched up with an opposing center and he's just physically just as strong as the guy and way faster and more athletic, generally speaking. So he's been put in advantageous one-on-one situations and he has the physical skill set, tool kit, all of that to make it happen. So
Jake, would you say that there are any of, I think, what, 11 different areas, are there any on here that stand out to you as a little too high or too low?
I would probably say both of the defensive grades are a little bit too high, specifically the perimeter defense. I think something that was a concern of his throughout college and has been apparent in the preseason is his defensive IQ and anticipation isn't quite there. He's a guy who had a reputation prior to college for going for highlight blocks, steals, and gambling a bit too much, getting out of position, not necessarily knowing where to be on the defensive side of the floor. And in college, he was just so much more athletic than everyone else that it didn't really matter. Here at the NBA level, teams are able to take advantage of that. So I'd probably expect him to not quite rate. Right now, we have him in the B-minus, B level for both perimeter and interior defense based off the responses to this poll. But I would probably expect him to come out maybe a little bit below that, closer to average, maybe even a touch below average, just because he doesn't quite have the anticipatory skills on the defensive side of the court yet to match with his athleticism. I expect him to become a, not like hyper elite defender, but pretty solid on that end. But it's just not quite there yet, and it's going to take repetition to go from being a rookie who has never really had to make these high-level defensive reads to being like a key part of a defense, given that he's going to play a large number of minutes of both power forward and center.
I'd agree that I think the perimeter defense is likely a little bit high. We had him a B minus, 65th percentile. I think I'm not quite as low as you, but I think he'd be in the mid to high 50s there. Mm-hmm. And from a defensive rebounding standpoint, he got a B plus, 75th percentile. I would anticipate that being higher. I think a certain bit of that will depend on exactly how he's used him, in what role, how mm-hmm. close to the basket he is, how many opportunities he'll have. But I think when he gets an opportunity, he's going to convert quite a bit on those defensive rebounds. So I would anticipate something in the mid 80s, low to mid 80s there. But everything else, to me, I feel as though I can defend them and they match with what I see when watching film for Zion. So it's I'm impressed with the, I mean, general public. I mean, we had 40 people fill this out, but of the people who participated, I think they did a pretty good job.
For sure. Yeah, they make sense. And I mean, this goes to show, if you get enough smart people together, the wisdom of a crowd is pretty good at defining a player. I think it's really exciting. And one thing we've been able to do with these grades now is plug it into the machine learning techniques we've been talking about the past couple of episodes to predict what offensive role is best for his, or the best based off his skill set. And I know, Tim, you've been recently looking at preseason offensive roles and have some thoughts.
Yeah, so last podcast we spoke about which preseason stats at the team level are perhaps more predictive towards what we'll see in the regular season to follow, and which ones aren't, and most of them weren't. If we're looking at a player level and thinking back to that podcast, we said at the team level, some of the things that stabilized more quickly during the season and some of the things that were more predictive from preseason to regular season were the shot profiles and more of those process stats about how much are they getting to the line, what is the rate of three-pointers that they're taking. If we try to translate that to the player level through a different lens, not looking at free throws drawn or three-pointers attempted, but we look at these offensive roles and the usage of players, the deployment of players, and the different synergy play types, the pick and rolls, post-ups, whatnot, it doesn't look nearly as predictive. I didn't run an analysis this week, but I did calculate what the roles would be for each of the players that have played so far, and it's a little bit all over the place. And I think a big piece of that is just the fact that the sample sizes are just so small. Mm-hmm. For a lot of guys, it does make sense. But then there are also players who are just in roles that, I mean, you're not going to see a center that's grading out as a primary creator or something, but within the guards, within the wings, within the bigs, I think there's a little bit of moving around that I wouldn't expect to see longer term. When only, you know, two or three possessions can make a big difference on what you're categorized with samples this small, you're going to see some weird results.
Yeah, and I think another thing on top of that that's likely causing some of the funky results is just that synergy is the way their stats are tracked is someone actually does it by hand, and there's going to be inconsistencies in the way different people view different play types. And over such a small sample, getting, as you said, one play being categorized as a cut versus like a off-screen action whatever it might be, something being categorized differently than it likely will be in the long run can cause a player to end up in being in a different role.
I'll push back a little bit on that. I think at the NBA level, it's at least from the synergy film I've watched, and you can go in, you can say, all right, they had 20 post-ups. Let me click on the button and look at the possessions or the off-screen or the cuts. For the most part, I think like 95% plus of the time, the NBA logging of possessions makes complete sense to me.
Right.
And they do it to the degree where it's not just an off-screen possession. You have to categorize exactly what kind it was. And I think that helps from a checks and balances standpoint, them be a little bit more accurate. I think on the defensive end, things get funky with the individual players, and I think we've touched on that before, and others have on Twitter as well. But I think for the purposes of what we're talking about with the offensive usage, I wouldn't say, I mean, it's, I don't think it's like a replacement refs kind of situation where they've got the JV squad in there logging possessions, I would assume. No. But I think you're right to say that if there is any variance greater to greater, the small samples like we're seeing here is where that would play the largest role.
Right. All I'm saying is even if they get it right 95% of the time, when there's only 20 possessions or even 40 possessions for a player that they're grading between, that 5% of inaccuracies, it's possible they ended up getting 20% wrong, just the way probabilities ends up working out for one specific player. Whereas over a larger sample of a full NBA season, those errors have a way of working themselves out and really fitting into that higher degree of accuracy we would expect.
Agreed. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or, you know, sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it. With a real doctor who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. And getting started is simple. Just go to getroman.com/bluewire and complete an online visit. ED used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Just go to getroman.com/bluewire to get a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's getroman.com/bluewire for a free visit to get started. Getroman.com/bluewire.
When you're selling online, getting your orders out can be a real pain. That's why you need ShipStation.com. It's the fastest, easiest, and most affordable way to manage and ship your orders. No matter where you're selling, Amazon, Etsy, or even your own website, ShipStation brings all your orders into one simple interface. ShipStation helps you get orders out quickly, save money on shipping costs, and keeps your customers happy. And right now, Blue Wire listeners can try ShipStation free for 60 days when you use promo code BLUE. There's absolutely no risk, and you can start your free trial without even entering your credit card info. ShipStation works with all your major carriers, including USPS, FedEx, UPS, and even Amazon Fulfillment. So you can compare and choose the best shipping solution for you and your customer. No wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll ship more in less time and with the best rates available. Just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in BLUE. That's ShipStation.com, then enter promo code BLUE. ShipStation.com, make ship happen.
Moving on from that, and we've introduced what the anticipated grades or the projected grades, maybe not projected, but the guess that the public has made on the grades for Zion.
Guesstimates.
The guesstimates. How they translate to the specific offensive roles, not in terms of how he's been used so far or projecting how he will be used, but where would he be the best fit with his skill set, with his height, with his weight, and with his anticipated offensive optimization, which we are just using prior year Alvin Gentry information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so his top offensive role, or his top role overall in terms of, you know, what would make him the most effective player he can be, would be the role of a roll and cut big. And just for a reminder, a roll and cut big, less than 15% of their possessions are spot ups, more than 15% are the roll man and pick and roll, and less than 15% are post ups. So it's someone who's not really having traditional big man plays drawn for them. They're running a lot of pick and roll. They're not spotting up a ton. It's kind of a more traditional off ball big without being like a post up big, if that makes sense, right?
It's kind of like your garbage man, your roll man, your mm-hmm. Clint Capellas, your DeAndre Jordans. These are the guys that they're not creating for themselves or really for others a whole lot, but they're finishing possessions, either getting dump offs after somebody penetrates and the defense comes over to stop the drive, or perhaps they're the roll man in a pick and roll. Those types of possessions are the ones that they're generally used the most in. Yeah. And if we are to look at the relative weighting of the specific talent areas and compare that with where Zion is today, with the projected ones, I think it lines up pretty well. So the top three areas for a roll and cut big, mm-hmm. Are roll gravity being weighed about 25%.
Which he had a 90 in our estimate.
Off ball movement at about 12%.
85 in our estimate.
And then finishing at about 10%.
94 in our estimate. Those are his three best categories. So
literally his top three are the three most important for this role. So we're not saying that he will be used this way, but if he's used this way, based off of, again, the guesstimations of his talent, this math would anticipate he'd be most impactful in that role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that makes a ton of sense. Outside of that, the following top roles for him were the other two big man roles, being either a versatile big or a pick and pop big. He doesn't quite fit into either of those molds as well. Obviously, a pick and pop big is doing a higher amount of spot up than we're likely to see from Zion. He's only taken 4 threes in all of preseason, though, as a callback to last episode, he's made 1. So,
oh yeah,
he's well on his way to winning whatever fake bet it was that we came up with. And outside of, you know, the big roles being the ones he would be projected to be most effective in, the ones for the wings that he'd be most effective in is as a glue guy, which makes a ton of sense. I mean, a glue guy is kind of the do-it-all type of player. And at this point, that's kind of what Zion is. He's not, outside of finishing and being physically ridiculous, he doesn't have like a super elite perimeter shooting skill, or he's not like a super elite creator for teammates or anything. So it makes a ton of sense that if he's not going to be a big in terms of his most optimized role, he'd end up being a wing who just kind of does a little bit of everything without being like a high volume shooter.
And one of the reasons why I think there's a difference in my head, I was anticipating glue guy being higher than mm-hmm. he graded out. And the reason for that is in the relative weightings, the bottom two talent areas were roll gravity and off ball movement in terms of importance for those players in that position to have a large impact. So he's well equipped in those areas, but those players aren't used as much as a roll man. And apparently they're not cutting as much. That's not as much a part of their game, to the point that his impact would be expected to be lower as a glue guy than as a versatile big. So I think with his specific skill set, I might argue that a little bit. But for most players, I think that makes some sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious when you're using this data and we're not using actual grades for how good he is going to be or has been. So there's a little bit of extra variance in terms of we just ask people what they think and, you know, people could end up being wrong. But it definitely makes sense that at the very least, the things we expect him to be good at or the roles we would expect him to most excel in are coming up as his top four.
For sure. And right now I'm trying to pull up what Zion's 2K overall offensive rating is. And I don't know if you're able to grab that either. But we can say that if he were deployed as a roll and cut big, he is estimated overall offensive rating, which we've scaled to those 2K ratings, we have as an 88 out of 99, mm-hmm. which is quite high. And I think speaks well to the type of impact he'd be able to create immediately as a rookie. And I would venture to guess that that'd be among the highest we've seen among rookie players, at least in our database.
Yeah, I would most certainly agree with that. I think just his high level finishing, relatively speaking, gets a good number of offensive rebounds and assists while not being a huge turnover player. Like, it's just a very efficient brand of offensive basketball, despite the fact that, you know, he's not like an elite individual creator yet at this point in his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I'm a Pelicans fan and I'm hearing that, I take it. That sounds like a great possible outcome, about as good as you could expect. And in some of the other roles, we see numbers ranging from the mid-70s up to the low 80s. So exactly how he's used within a couple of those different roles may not make a huge difference from role to role, but from that bunch up to being like a glue guy or a tall creator or a versatile big, pick and pop big, that's a big jump. And then from that group up to a roll and cut big is another pretty large jump. So hopefully the Pelicans are able to figure him out. He's a unique player in terms of his physical skill set, so that may impact the way that he's from like a 1-5 slot, the way that they play him. So it'll be interesting to see if they're able to get him the right type of looks that puts him into one of these top couple categories or that top role of a roll and cut big.
Absolutely. And I mean, the indications early on is they will, that as we discussed earlier in the podcast, that offensively they're doing a good job playing to his strengths. And I mean, they've been the Pelicans in the preseason have been a very fun team to watch. Hopefully that continues into the regular season and they turn some of this fun credit into good credit. And you know, I think personally they have a real shot at a lower seed in the playoffs. So I think it would be a very exciting season for the Pelicans considering all that went on last year.
Yeah. Yeah. They're in a much happier place now. It'll be one of those top, you know, league pass type teams. I don't know exactly how good they'll be, but they should be really exciting. Lots of highlight plays. They have a number of young, exciting players, and Zion's not the only rookie that falls into that group. They've got some real talent over there, and I'm going to see them play the Nets in New Orleans later in the year. So I'm excited for that. Hopefully by then, both of those teams will be excited and enrolling a little bit.
Absolutely, yeah. Between all the young rookies on the Pelicans, all the Lakers players, specifically Lonzo, who is looking better in this offensive system. Drew Holiday, always really, really underrated and really, really good. I mean, that's legitimately like a deep, good, fun squad.
And we forget about Derek Favors.
Starting center for the team. Like, legitimately was great for the Jazz last year and just ended up getting crunched by their cap situation and the Pelicans taking advantage of it. Savvy moves.
Absolutely. I think in a way, not in every way, but in a way, Favors is kind of like the Al Horford of the team, where he's going to be providing a lot of value. He's going to be incredibly useful for the team, but the attention, the flair maybe, and then the eyes will be drawn towards some of the other players on that roster. But just like Al Horford with the Celtics the past couple of years, I think Favors will be an incredibly useful player, maybe not in the exact same ways, but don't underrate what he brings to the table.
Absolutely. Next to, as we talked about, Zion's defense is not quite there yet. So playing next to someone like Derek Favors, who is excellent on that end, will really help smooth things out, especially given their perimeter defense is going to be ridiculously good with Zion and Drew. Like, that might be the best backcourt defensively in the league already. So hopefully between those two, Derek Favors, they're able to help Zion along. They're able to keep their defense afloat. It should be a really, really exciting year.
Yeah, I think Lonzo and Drew Holiday last year were, two of our top five perimeter?
Might even be two of the top three with Marcus Smart, if memory serves.
Yeah, that could be very well correct. So, they'll be a fun team defensively. They've got a lot just there already. Mm-hmm. And then offensively, I think they've got the right mind to put these pieces together. So they have a real chance if things hit the right way and like Nikhil Alexander-Walker is a factor that maybe not too many people were anticipating going into the year. Maybe the PIPM models not didn't see him coming. So no, they're an exciting team
for sure. I think that's all we have for today. Tim, what do you have going on between now and the season starting on Tuesday?
I have to set up a lot of things for a lot of people. I have to send pricing information to people. We have to get our gambling picks for the public up.
Yes, we do.
We have our back-end stuff figured out. The models are ready to roll. We'll get that up and available. Pricing details will be available on Twitter. We'll have them on the site. And continue to check out our $5 data and tools package. And unlike the past, pretty much since it's existed, the numbers will update now. We'll have most of what's in there will be updating daily, and it'll be a fun thing, a fun tool, fun package of tools to be using to track throughout the season to see the gravity as that develops, the grades as those develop, the PIPM, all that stuff. Jacob, question for you that would be useful for the listeners. At what point in the season should we expect 2019-2020 talent grades available?
Probably about 20 or so games into the season. I would guess mid to early December is around the point when...
I think that's when we did it last year.
Yeah, I'm willing to bet that's exactly when we did it last year. But I think around there it starts to get stable enough, but we'll be starting to calculate it a little bit earlier in the year. And if we see it stabilized earlier, we'll put it out earlier.
Yeah, I'm excited.
For sure, yeah.
We have a lot going on, a lot of good writers that we have. If you followed the site last year, we had, 20, 25 writers covering a bunch of different teams. We've shifted approaches this year and tried to tone back the quantity, tone up maybe the thought and the integration of the data put into the pieces. So I wouldn't anticipate seeing any game recaps or game previews or some of the, I don't know, more mainstream types of coverage that you'll tend to see at the very saturated NBA media landscape. We're going to have writers working on what we'd say are thought-provoking pieces that apply to more than one team at a time, supported and integrated with the data we have, with film analysis, experts on the salary cap, biomechanics, strength and conditioning, injuries. I'm forgetting the X's and O's. So we've brought in some new skill sets. We've got some new great data people working on cool data projects. So more original content to be produced on the data side to keep an eye out for, and then on the written content side as well. And I think we'll be able to pull some of those writers on. We had Alex Regla on a month or two ago, but we'll be bringing on some of those writers in that group of that stable of writers that we have to maybe talk about some of the pieces that they're writing that they've recently published. Because again, it'll be more than, you know, Tim doing his Lakers piece and Tony doing his Pacers piece. It'll be more general but interesting coverage that can apply to multiple teams at a time.
Absolutely. It's an exciting year number two for the B-Ball Index. I'll have my 2019-20 official finalized approved win projections for the season coming out sometime this upcoming weekend, hopefully Saturday, but depending on my schedule, potentially Sunday. But, you know, this time next week, actual basketball, some real stuff to talk about, and we can make wild conclusions about the rest of the season based off two games. I am really excited.
All right, sounds good. It's time to hop off and go watch the very important and predictive Lakers preseason game and get a little bit angry online.
Nothing better. Thank you all for tuning in to this week's episode. We'll see you next week. It's basketball time.